It's time for Ask Dr. Daria on RadioMD.com. Do you have a question? Tweet your questions to @ShareCareNow using hashtag ShareCareRadio or email your questions to AskDrDaria@RadioMD.com. Here's Dr. Daria.
Welcome back. Have health questions? I am here to answer them. Every week I answer real ShareCare users' questions on all things health and wellness. So let's jump into our first one. This was from one of our listeners who asked, is eating before going to bed bad for me? So this is kind of a complicated question. I recommend against eating too much late at night for a couple of reasons. Number one, total calories. Usually the foods that you're eating at these times are high in calories. They're often empty calories, and they're often things that you wouldn't otherwise be eating. So you're just adding more calories to your total daily intake that you probably wouldn't otherwise have. Number two is that eating late at night may also disturb your circadian rhythm, which could affect your appetite and it could affect your metabolism. Lastly, large meals can also disrupt your sleep. They can cause you to have heartburn, which can often keep you laying awake late at night. And foods that cause blood sugar spikes could also cause you to, sweating at night, waking up at night, feeling jittery, and then having a crash. So again, not really going to help you. Also know that caffeine may disrupt your sleep, but look for other culprits as well, including alcohol and even chocolate, which contains caffeine. So all in all, if you're hungry, have a small snack, something healthy with some fiber, some good fats that will keep you full, because you don't want to go to bed hungry. That's not a good solution. But you also don't want to go to bed with a really big meal. Think of the sumo wrestlers of Japan. The way they gain weight is by those heavy meals right before bed. So try to do the opposite of what they're doing. If you need to eat something, keep it light. Don't get a great big heavy meal. Our next question was, how often should I feel my baby move during pregnancy? From one of our pregnant listeners, of course. Now, babies start to move as early as 7 to 8 weeks of gestation, although the mother usually doesn't feel it until around 16 to 20 weeks and in the second trimester. Now, women who've had multiple babies often report feeling it earlier, maybe at 18 weeks versus later than 20 weeks for the first timers. Often that could be just because they're used to the feeling, they know what to expect, and they're able to identify it sooner. Now, these babies can be very active, and any mother can tell you. They bend, they kick, they hiccup, spinning around and even stretching. And, activity increases throughout the day and peaks late at night, which, again, any mother, any woman who's been pregnant can tell you about the difficulty sleeping at night when your baby seems to be doing acrobatics. Of course, every baby is unique, so there isn't one value that works for all pregnancies as far as a number. So no matter the number, if you experience a decrease in movement from whatever is normal for your baby, call your doctor. Again, listen to your gut. If it's not your normal, you need to talk to your doctor to be on the safe side. That said, if you're in the third trimester and you want to check, you can monitor your baby's movements for 2 hours. It's best while lying on your side. Most healthy babies will have at least 10 kicks over 2 hours during whatever is their normal active time. And again, you know your baby best. If you're in doubt, call your doctor. That's what we are there for. And that's what your OBGYN is there for, is to help you with those questions. Our next question is from one of our listeners about multivitamins. And she asked, can multivitamins be harmful? So just like any substance in the world, multivitamins can be dangerous if they're not taken as directed or by certain people who could have interactions with them. For one, it's possible to overdose on multivitamins, especially those that have iron in them, which can cause iron poisoning, and especially that can be very, very dangerous in children. In others, fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A and D can be toxic at high levels. And it's really important to only take the doses recommended. There was a recent study that suggested that people who take vitamins at doses well above the recommended daily allowance may actually increase their risk of cancer. Also, for patients who are on various medications, I always want them to just mention their multivitamin to their doctor to make sure they're not taking anything that could interact with it. Remember also, a vitamin does not replace a good diet. So number one best to get way to get all your vitamins and minerals is by having a really healthy, balanced diet. If you feel that you're still missing that or have trouble getting all of that in, you can take a multivitamin, but make sure that you only take it in the recommended doses, because a little is good, but more can actually be dangerous. So remember that when you're looking for the next multivitamin in the store. Our next listener had said, what do I need to know about booster seats for my child? And this is something that as both an ER doctor and as a mom, I feel very strongly because I often see children coming into the ER having worn a child's car seat or a booster seat inappropriately. And I just think of the disasters that could have been prevented by proper use of these. So for booster seats, remember the rules. The child should be rear facing until they are 2 years old in a regular car seat. And they have reached the highest height and weight limit for the chair. That's often around 40 to 50 pounds. Keep them backwards. Keep them rear facing. A lot of parents worry, I think my child looks uncomfortable. It looks like their legs are squished. In reality, when they looked at studies, children had a higher rate of fractures of breaking their leg when they're facing forward in an accident than when they're facing backwards. So again, even if your child's legs seem long, if they're under the height weight limit of that chair and under 2 years old, keep them facing backwards. It is the very safest way to ride. Turn them forward as long as it's allowed by the seat manufacturer. So again, look at your specific seat. Once they outgrow that, they need to usually have a booster seat until the vehicle seatbelt fits them appropriately. And that's usually around 4'9" and 8 to 12 years. Also, all children under 13 years old should remain in the back seat, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, because the risk of injury and death in smaller adolescents and children from those airbags. So when in doubt, look at the rules on your child care's on your car seat. And remember, rear facing until 2 years old and at the height and weight limit, then forward facing, then they'll transition to a booster seat. So it's a long time now before they're actually in the seatbelt, a lot longer than most parents when they were children remained in car seats. So good to remember, ask your pediatrician if you're in doubt, and also check out healthychildren.org. They have some great information there, and it's put on by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Now, switching gears, this other listener had asked us, how harmful are daily changes in blood pressure related to stress? So there's two issues here. There's elevations in your blood pressure and there's stress. And they are related, but it's important to look at them separately. Regarding stress, now low levels of stress are important. They keep us pushing forward and working harder. But always operating at chronically high levels of stress is detrimental to your health. One study of 200,000 people in Europe found that having a stressful job and feeling like you're helpless or have little say in your role could raise your risk of heart attack by 23%. Stress can also increase your chance of catching colds and other infections because it actually weakens your immune system and even may increase your risk of cancer. As for blood pressure, of course, high blood pressure can be dangerous, especially rapid spikes in your blood pressure because that can cause more strain on your heart. And it can increase your risk for stroke, and chronic increased pressure changes the blood vessels as well and worsens your chances for cardiovascular disease as well. So blood pressure, stress, neither of them are good at high levels, and they do interact, and one worsens the other. Our next listener said, when should I stop getting a colonoscopy? That's a really good question. And honestly, different organizations have different opinions. So no matter what I say here today, you're going to have to speak to your doctor because everyone is different. According to the United States Preventive Services Task Force and the American College of Physicians, a patient does not need regular colonoscopy above the age of 75 if they meet the following. Now, if you've had colonoscopy regularly since age 50 and it's always been negative, never any polyps, never any cancer, if you have no family history suggestive of a higher risk of colon cancer, and you have no other factors putting you at higher risk of colon cancer, then you can stop at age 75. But the American Academy of Surgeons and the American Cancer Society and the American College of Gastroenterology does not give ages at which you should stop. So it's always important to make the decision via a thorough discussion with your doctor. And if in doubt, you would need to keep going and continue to talk to them. Our last one was about tracking my food intake. And first of all, I want to applaud you for wanting to track your food intake. Countless studies have shown that we're generally unaware of how many calories we eat. So there are some great opportunities, including some online, some apps, and good old-fashioned tracking it on a piece of paper and pad, whatever keeps it on your mind and keeping track of what you're eating. That's all the time we have for today. We'll be back next week on ShareCare Radio. And in the meantime, feel free to tweet your health questions, comments, or suggestions to our Twitter at ShareCare Inc. using the hashtag ShareCare Radio or at Dr. Daria. And you can always download at RadioMD.com. This is Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio on Radio MD, where we help you be your healthiest you. Thanks for listening and stay well. Ooh, 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 ooh.